It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. It's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as 95% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And it is it's a Sunday morning now. This is an early podcast for us, but it's the first cup of coffee I've had in the day. So
yeah, mine too.
While to ramp up. So this week, it's another one of those weeks. I mean, the world is in uncharted territories, to put it the least. So yeah, we have to keep talking about what's going on outside the world of geek. And this weekend was one of the most depressing days I've ever seen, followed by one of the most heartwarming days I've ever seen, which was the inauguration, which as I watched it, whether you are pro-Trump or anti-Trump, it had a funereal feeling to it, and then a very grim, foreboding speech.
And yeah,
sparsely attended,
and very short. I don't remember exactly like Obama's speech and his inauguration, and I don't remember George Bush's. But I remember, obviously, Clinton. I was watching like Power Rangers. I didn't care, but the other two, I was definitely like aware of and like trying to watch and stay up on stuff like this. It's like the State of the Union address is like the next big one. You kind of watch like certain
speeches.
Oh God, what
that's gonna be like?
Who the fuck knows? But I'm saying like it was short. Normally that speech is like a 40-minute like speech.
Yeah,
and he talked for 14 minutes
and accidentally quoted Bane.
Yeah, you were saying, we talked before the show. There's like memes all over the place that he plagiarized Bane.
Apparently he said, "We give the country back to you, the people."
Yeah, and I don't know that that's...
And there was video side by side.
Yeah, coincidence.
But yeah, was it deliberate? Not on Trump's part. I don't think Trump cares about a movie that came out 5 years ago.
I don't think Trump knows that that movie got made. I can't imagine him sitting down and watching the Dark Knight Strikes.
I think he knows it got made because he had a TV show and that was the most popular movie out.
I'm sure.
That's as far as it
goes. I'm sure he knew there was a Batman movie, but obviously, I don't think he knows anything about it.
No, obviously if he knew anything about Batman, he would realize who he is in the grand scheme of
things. I think he would think he's Batman, that he's like a rich billionaire crusader fighting for the rights of the working class. I think that's how delusional this guy is.
Horrifying.
And before, I'm sorry this is like a political podcast now. We are going to try to get to like actual superhero stuff in a minute. But yeah, I want to say to, you know, if you're among my friends who aren't like, don't agree with me and are like, yeah, I voted for Trump, I like Trump, that's good for you. That's America, you know, enjoy it. But he's not a Republican. And he doesn't have any of your best interests at heart. And you know this by just looking at all the cabinet positions he's already filled. It's billionaires and oil tycoons. They put a Goldman Sachs guy in charge.
There's five of them.
Five of them. And it's like, who the fuck still thinks that this guy has... I mean, he bamboozled half the country. Because I don't think everyone who voted for Trump is like a racist person. Clearly,
no, I don't have problems with people who voted for Trump. Serious problems with Trump.
Yes, and to be fair,
I'm going to talk about
5 years ago when this guy was fighting with Rosie O'Donnell and had a fucking reality TV show. If I told anyone who voted for Trump this year or last year, I guess, that Donald Trump would run for president, you would have laughed your ass off. This isn't like a political guy. This guy was a fucking reality star joke.
He's never had a government position until president. It's never happened.
And that's the thing. It's just
somebody's always a senator or a governor.
Or in the military. This guy has no career whatsoever. And so my frustration when we come to talk about this stuff, I'm not playing political games. We're all Americans. I just think let's agree on what the fuck reality is and realize that this guy is highly unqualified to do this job. And this isn't about sour grapes. I didn't like Hillary Clinton either. I didn't vote for her, but it's like the...
I wanted to vote for Bernie Sanders, but that was not...
Right, well, that's how I guess I said. Yeah. I did the Bernie Sanders.
I did vote for Bernie in the primaries.
Right, that's what I did. But what I'm saying is like... I don't think she would have been any better because she would have put a Goldman Sachs dude in charge too. I'm just saying.
No, but Hillary would have maintained the status quo.
Exactly. I think Hillary's
cabinet would have been a somewhat compromised, corrupt version of Obama's cabinet. So she would have continued those programs, but not really created any more progress.
Right.
And there would have been constant fighting. The Republicans would be trying to impeach her all the time.
Right. Now it's like,
it wouldn't have been fun.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been like a golden age of humanity.
No, it would have been another four years of the same.
What we have now is insanity. The inauguration had 1/10 the amount of people that showed up for the last inauguration. And the first act of the press secretary was to come out and lie about that
and
say it was the most people ever.
And that's what I'm saying is like, that's why this is dangerous. Mm-hmm. And when people are like, you're a bunch of crybabies. The people who are freaking out about this, they're not crybabies, and no one's overreacting. There are legitimate, real concerns of, like, this guy taking over. So, like,
The rally yesterday was immense. It was maybe the biggest protest in history when you count every single country that participated. It was close to 500,000 people in every city, and all 50 states participated.
Yeah.
We have we both have lots and lots of friends that were there. My social network feed was full of pictures from multiple cities and multiple destinations.
Yeah.
If the inauguration got 1/10 of what Obama got, and the protests got millions and millions more.
And
that sends a message.
There's a lot of people, I think, that are like, well, fuck Obama, or they hate Obama, or they're like, he was the first black president, so that's why he got such huge numbers. Go and see Bill Clinton's inauguration. Go and see George Bush's inauguration. Go see George W. Bush's inauguration. They all had much bigger turnouts. And so this isn't
a much smaller protest, because George W. Bush, remember, came in on the heels of the recount. And
yeah.
I was one of those people who's not happy to see him elected because of the Florida recounts, but it wasn't nearly this extent. And the response was to send his press secretary out and say more people
it's
showed
a lie.
Up. But
we don't have pictures.
But it's also
facts.
It's also timing with him, because that came out in the middle of the march, which meant he couldn't handle the march. Then he goes to CIA headquarters, who he kept saying he didn't trust, because they're talking about the Russian involvement, which is terrifying.
Right.
And he goes and stands in front of a wall of like fallen CIA operatives and talks about himself and how mean the press is to him. And the reason the press is mean to him is they're reporting what he's doing.
Yeah.
But they're not being flattering enough. And yeah, we're both completely going on a political rampage right now. But yesterday was one of the most positive days I've seen in a long time. Friday was very, very dour. I was at work and we were all like looking over one laptop. And I work in an industry that's overwhelmingly left-leaning. I do have a few people that I've worked with that are right-leaning. They're friends of mine. But for the most part, I mean, it's creative. Creative industries are pretty left.
Tend to be left. That's why Hollywood is all liberals, because...
Right. Well, yeah, because they tend to be more open-minded and more aspirational.
Yes.
Because they're focused into their imaginations and what is possible.
Right.
They're not focused
into
the harsh realities of the world.
You tend not to find...
Sometimes.
It's like comic fans. You tend not to find a lot of racist Star Trek fans. Do you know what I mean? It's
right.
Like, because if you watch Star Trek...
Star Trek is all about equality.
It's all about equality.
And the advancement of the human race.
Exactly. They're very liberal. Liberal thinking individuals. They got good politics, by and large.
I mean, yeah, and there are conservative comic fans. I mean, both Chuck Dixon and Graham Nolan, who are heroes of mine, they've both been on the show. I got along with them great. They're both conservative, and that is fine.
Ethan Van Sciver is like a crazy Republican, like, nut job.
Yeah.
He's a lunatic.
Yeah.
And him and Matt Waite fight on the internet constantly about it.
But and I've had friends that are very smart. People that I know going back to high school that have always been conservative, that were like very pro-Reagan when I was in high school with them, who I have one good friend who's just like, this is too much.
Yeah.
He wanted Kasich to run, and I would have been fine with that.
Kasich is an idiot, but I mean, at least he's cut from the same cloth as the general box of idiots that have kind of made a mess of things, mm-hmm. but at least you know what you're getting with these guys.
Well, I read a really interesting thing that Robert Reich wrote. who was Treasury Secretary under Clinton, and now he's like very activist. He's really interesting. There's a great documentary called Inequality for All on Netflix that I watched, and it's partially his biography and partially his philosophy. He's got a really, really good Facebook feed. He'll go on live and talk to people, and he'll post articles. And he said he was talking to a senator who had recently left the GOP because of the way things were turning.
Yeah.
And he said their whole strategy, once they knew Trump was going to be the nominee, their whole strategy is to just use him to get everything they want. Repeal Obamacare, get more tax cuts.
Yeah.
You know, basically all of these policies that the Bush administration was doing, try to roll back as much of what Obama was doing as possible. And then they're just going to wait for him to do something so crazy that they can impeach him. And once they decide to impeach him, the Democrats will be right behind him.
Yeah.
So they think he's nuts. But they really like Mike Pence. So this guy is just set up to just push over and then make Pence the president. And at this point, fine.
No, because
Pence is not great, but he's not going to actively destroy this country.
No, but Mike Pence believes like in conversion therapy for like gay people. Like Mike Pence is very dangerous.
Yeah, but I feel like conversion therapy is not a law that will pass.
Yeah, I mean,
Elizabeth Warren is not going to let conversion therapy happen.
I think I think he's very dangerous too. But out of the two of them, he actually probably would be the less damaging. At least he's not going to like nuke Chile or something. You know what I mean? It's just like, who the fuck knows what Donald Trump is going to do? At least Mike Pence has government experience.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. I also read I've been reading tons of articles about this because I'm trying to wrap my head around it. And the hardest thing that I'm coming to terms with is I have yet to see a strong Trump endorsement that doesn't end as a fuck you to somebody else. You know, it's like, Trump is great because Hillary's horrible and Obama was a Muslim.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, yeah, but why is Trump good?
And that's the problem.
I don't see anybody coming up with that.
Everyone who talks to me and says, well, you know, give him a chance, Trump's going to do this and this, it's like, not only do I not know what like they're basing this on, and like, you know, the give him a chance is the worst because we did give him a chance the entire time he was campaigning. That was his chance. And he mocked a disabled reporter. He talked about creating a registry for Muslims. It's like, at what point do you guys want to check
his
out?
His inaugural speech is about a post-apocalyptic America that he's stepping into. And then the next day he's lying about how many people came out to see him. That's like
here's the real.
How many chances do you give a guy?
Well, here's the real danger.
You know,
there is a mass shooting coming. We know it's like science. It's like a fact. There's going to be another mass shooting in 2017.
We've had a lot of them.
It's inevitable. All right. God forbid there's like another terrorist attack. Who among us thinks that if there's like a Muslim, a radical Islamic terrorist or whatever people want to use, whatever term they want, blows up like a church or something, or some crazy white guy runs in and tries to start a race war like that fucking lunatic that they just gave the death penalty to,
yeah, the
Charleston
church.
How do we think Trump's going to handle that? Do we think it's going to be this measured response? Do we think it's going
to
be...
There's nothing about Trump that says measured response to anything.
And that's the thing. This is like he's like
why was he yelling at Rosie O'Donnell for 2 years? I never figured that out. Rosie O'Donnell didn't figure it out. He just decided he hated her because she was fat and a lesbian.
Yeah.
And just yelled at her all the time.
And that's what I'm saying. It's just like that's the real danger. Is like it's not so much what he'll do. It's what he's going to react to that I'm worried about,
right? And
because
he has a Republican majority, so there's not a lot of voices
and just
that are going to go against him.
President Obama killed like 114 civilians over his presidency. I think I can't remember, but it's like 100 and something in the teens or 20s. Civilians were murdered with drones during the Obama administration, and this huge surveillance apparatus is in place that Bush built and Obama made like 10 times scarier. So he doesn't have like a great record either. But all that stuff and the suspension of like habeas corpus, Guantanamo Bay not being closed, we have the apparatus for a police state in this country. And I think it's like
we have the impetus now.
It sounds crazy, right? It sounds crazy to
blocking
think
the media and
that's
know,
yeah
shutting down access and trying to discredit anybody that criticizes. It's all dictator type.
Right. It's like, this is the slippery slope.
And he keeps talking about how much he likes Putin, which is why yesterday, to turn things a little more positive. Yesterday, when I saw millions and millions and millions of people marching, and this overwhelming majority, it gave me hope of like, you know what? I think there's enough people to not let this happen one way or another.
Yeah, I think it's tricky. There's too many guns in America is basically the point I think I'm trying to make is the government. I know there's no amount of firepower that can stand up to drones, but there is an awful lot of angry people. There's Terminators, but I'm saying we have a lot of guns.
We had a lot
of big
drones in Terminator 2. They were like aircraft carrier sized drones.
Yeah. And I don't think you're not going to win a fight with like our AK-47s in people's basements or whatever. That isn't going to win the fight against the government, but it's like,
well, those guys also aren't trained. They own a lot of guns because they own a lot of guns. But when something happens,
exactly.
Those guys run away.
But I think the idea of this armed civilian hopefully is enough to, you know, keep people from getting like crazy ideas in the government about like, hey, we've got Guantanamo Bay and we suspended habeas corpus. Start locking up protesters. Stop locking up anybody. You know, start locking up Muslims. It's like, it would be like, I don't know. It's just,
it's a scary time.
It's a scary time because it's so uncertain. Who the fuck knows what's going to happen?
Right.
And it's like, I don't remember.
You know, Dan Rather wrote a piece. Again, I'm following a lot of people that are talking about what's going to happen because I don't know. And Dan Rather said, what defines a president is what happens that no one is expecting. So,
like 9/11.
9/11 or
Katrina.
Katrina. Katrina is the perfect example. Because, in my opinion, Katrina sums up the Bush presidency of like just both times a huge crisis happened in this country, Bush just sat there and stared and then took too long to respond. And then the response was not adequate, and then he congratulated his friend who did a poor job. Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. That's what that administration was. It was cronyism at its height.
Yeah,
you know, to where people think that it was really Karl Rove and Dick Cheney running everything, and that Bush was just their crony. But with this, it's people dangerously unqualified.
Yeah,
like
so,
Betsy DeVos saying we should have guns in school because of grizzly bears.
Well, the biggest
to where
thing
Al Franken can take her down in 2 minutes.
Yeah,
and I love Al Franken, but Al Franken spent all of his career on Saturday Night Live and has been a senator for less than 10 years. If he can take down the nominee for the Secretary of Education, in 2 minutes,
that's bad.
That person's not strong.
Well, all right. So the last guy, that was in charge of the nuclear weapons.
Well, now it's Rick Perry, who didn't know he was going to do it.
Yeah, well, the last guy who did it, just for context, was like a PhD in a nuclear physicist. This is a smart, really smart guy. Rick Perry failed like junior high chemistry, and this was the department he couldn't remember the name of that he wanted to defund.
Yeah, Rick Perry's moment in history is in a debate saying, I'm going to shut down three departments, and then forgetting
the
department that he is now in charge of. And there
right.
There was a dangerous precedent of Trump nominating people that actively despise the department they are being nominated to.
Right.
And I read this article. I swear we're going to get to superheroes. I swear.
I don't. Yeah.
I read this article. I think it was in Vanity Fair. But it interviewed three of his biographers. And it was the most enlightening article I ever read. Because these are guys that spent years with Trump and built a psychological profile. And the thing about Trump is, he likes loyalty, and he likes fighting, which is all of what he's done. Like, he's in charge now, and he's still trying to yell at people.
Yeah.
Like, he's at a point now where, now that he's passed an inauguration, he's yelling at himself, because he's saying the country is bad. In 3-4 months, when he says the country is bad, isn't he just yelling at himself for being the president of a bad country?
Right.
He's still trying to, like, pick fights with Hillary, who doesn't have a job anymore.
Yeah.
Like, she's not, you know, she's not Secretary of State, and she's not running for president.
He gave her a shout out at like some ball or something.
But he's still like, all he knows how to do is attack. All he knows how to do is competition.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not a well dude. I don't understand why there's no like, and maybe this has to be like a new rule. There's got to be like a psychological test you can take now to be president.
There's got
to
be a vetting of nominees.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like, because this literally just means anybody can be president. It's like, we got to stop saying that, because not everybody should be president, you know, because it's just like, this dude isn't like qualified. And maybe that we can make like a segue.
And also, he's what's really frightening is his cabinet is that he's got a very small pool to pick from because people don't trust him. People don't want to work for him. They said he has a history of being hands off and then suddenly micromanaging, which is the last boss you want to be with.
Yeah.
You know, like you get no direction and then you get yelled at. I've had that boss. And
Stan Lee was that boss.
Yeah, Stan. That's how we got a nose on Iron Man for a year.
Because I didn't fucking know what he was talking about anymore.
Stan Lee was coming in one day a week and trying to be a celebrity.
Just think of any job you've had. And I've had the same experience. I had a manager that got promoted into corporate, came back 6 months later. This was at Jewel, trying to tell us like how to do stuff that he knew as a manager were bad policies. And when we talked to him about it, he was just like, well, I'm the boss. That's the way we do it. And it's just like, dude, a year and a half ago, you stood with me in this exact same spot bitching about the guy in your shoes now that told you the same thing 3 years ago. And it's like, it's unbelievable. Honestly, and that's upper management shit.
And that's the GOP, because every single one of those leaders were attacking Trump in the campaign. And now they're like, no, let's do what he wants, which tells me it's not going to last that long. Let's get out of this and try to stay positive. But to bring it back to geekness, one of the things that the Tea Party and the alt-right, they keep changing their name because they keep fighting amongst themselves and fracturing.
Thank God. If these fuckers could get organized, we would be in trouble.
One of the things they tried to organize and boycott against a couple months ago was Rogue One, because they said it was an anti-Trump film. I've seen it. I'm actually thinking about going again maybe today, because I only saw it once. And I don't see anything that actually points out Trump other than the Empire is evil.
Yeah, well,
if you want to see an anti-Trump film, go back and watch Attack of the Clones and see how Palpatine steals executive powers for himself
right. And
turns a republic into an empire. That's anti-Trump, but that was made in 2002.
Right. It is in the sense that, like, look, that's like racist recognizing themselves in the mirror. As the Empire. Look, the Empire, I don't know if you guys have noticed, none of the people in the Empire are not white guys. They're right. All white guys. So the Empire...
Except for Jango Fett, who is a clone.
But he's like a guy working for white guys. He's just a guy that gets like a paycheck from white guys.
Yeah. But they cloned him, so there's like a million Jango Fetts at least running around.
But they're all like mind control.
And they're all kind of Samoan.
Yeah, they're mind control people. But yeah. I'm saying like, you know, it's a bunch of rich white dudes running the government.
With British
the Empire
accents.
With British accents. It's white people. And, you know, because historically speaking, it's white people
right. That
have like tried to take over the world.
And
remember when Germany tried to take over the world twice?
White people.
So
we started thinking about this precedence of
bad guys winning.
Yeah, and it's because as this happened, I'm like, don't we have enough warnings in popular entertainment? But they've been attacking. They've been attacking the arts, attacking people like Meryl Streep.
Yeah,
they're attacking anyone that's criticizing. But they're making a point to attack the media and attack entertainment, because those are people that reach a mass audience with a message. And if that message is not what this administration is trying to promote. So we started thinking about all of these stories in comics and in movies.
And the more I sit in, the more I think. I just rewatched V for Vendetta. I've never read the comic, but go watch that fucking movie. And that is some scary shit to watch now.
And now Anonymous, who appropriated that mask from the movie more than the comic, is now saying that just wait.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It's just like there's a lot of good comics that kind of do the same thing. Nick Spencer is writing the both Captain America books right now. And clearly, if you're reading those books, you're aware that this guy is paying attention to politics, because he brings up like the alt-right, but it's the Marvel superhero version of the alt-right is the Serpent Society.
Right.
They're like a racist
and the alt-right
snake
got
people.
Mad at it.
Right. And the alt-right and the same shit. They see themselves in that and getting mad about it. And it's just like you're sympathizing with racist characters that are based on the KKK.
And you're angry that they're presented as villains.
Right. And guess what? Because they are. And
but let's talk about some of the stories in comic history.
Well, I think there's a lot of, as far as like politics affecting comics. So like the big one that I remember is Dark Avengers. And Dark Avengers was like a response to like the George Bush/Obama like war on terror.
But I think
years.
It's more appropriate today.
Oh, yeah.
Because in Dark Avengers, you have, which was a great book on its own. The problem with it was kind of bookended by two big crossovers.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really a story.
It was like a status quo more than a story.
And it bounced around in a lot of books. There was a Dark Avengers book, but the characters showed up everywhere.
But that's a great concept for a comic, and they've done stuff like this before where you take a guy like the Green Goblin who's cuckoo banana balls like a lunatic.
Right.
And then that character for years wasn't, since the death of Gwen Stacy, like on, there wasn't really a thing he did anymore. He was just dead. Well, I know he was dead for a lot of it, but they brought like him back a couple times.
He was dead for 20 years. They brought him back to finally finish the Clone Saga.
Right.
Because they had no other way to finish it.
And that's what I'm saying. So it's like, they brought him back. He didn't really do much. When he came back, it was a shitty story no one really cares about. There wasn't anything like big he did. Then they were like, all right, get him off the Goblin juice. Make him Norman Osborn.
Who was a cold, calculating
businessman. Yeah. And they put him in charge of a government program. Basically, Suicide Squad.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
For Thunderbolts.
Yes. But the thing about Thunderbolts was Thunderbolts were villains that were in disguise as heroes. And as the book went on, a lot of them
reformed
and became
heroes.
That's
like the original Thunderbolts. They like brought the concept back as like a government program where it was basically the Suicide Squad. They took a bunch of villains and they said, go do good work. And Norman Osborn was like the Amanda Waller guy, like calling the shots.
Yeah. But Norman Osborn was always unhinged and he was given way too much power.
Right.
And used that power to settle his personal vendettas.
Right.
And the two best stories, I thought, in that era were not in Dark Avengers. Dark Avengers was Bendis and Diodato and was pretty good. It was a lot about the Sentry, who I don't care about. But there was a There was a one-shot that Dan Slott wrote where the big thing that we haven't mentioned is that when Norman Osborn takes over for S.H.I.E.L.D., which he turns into Hammer.
Which we never got the acronym for what Hammer stood for.
No, and Justin Hammer was not involved.
No.
But he also got access to all of Tony Stark's old armors, so he started running around in an Iron Man suit.
Calling himself the Iron Patriot.
And that's where the Iron Patriot comes from, and that was used in Iron Man 3 for Rhodey.
Yeah.
But it actually comes from Norman Osborn, who just painted some blue onto an Iron Man suit and made it red, white, and blue. And so now you had him going from the Green Goblin to being Iron Man. And then there's a one-shot that called The List, Darker in the List, that Slott wrote, where he's just like, hey, I'm running the government. I'm going to go kill Spider-Man with my Iron Man suit.
Yeah.
And see how well that
works. And they did it a couple of times because they did that. Then they did an arc in the Spider-Man book that John Romita Jr. drew where Norman Osborn sent like the Thunderbolts after Spider-Man.
Also gave Harry his own Iron Man suit.
Yeah. They were doing cool ideas. Even like the Dark Avengers was a cool concept.
But the best thing they did was the Iron Man run. The Iron Man run.
Yeah.
It's the highlight of a really great run where...
That might be my favorite Iron Man run. Demon in the Bottle is a great story. There's a lot of good, but that's a great run.
It's a great story.
Iron Man.
Yeah, America's Most Wanted was Norman. Norman finds out that he goes to get the file that has the secret identity of every superhero. And it's been erased. And Tony Stark erased it on his way out before Norman came in.
It's hopefully like what Obama did with like any kind of like list he was cultivating.
Norman knows Tony's the only person who knows it. And Tony goes, well, the only place this list exists is in my brain. And he deletes his own brain.
Yeah, he deletes his like memory.
And
it has a side effect.
Well, it's a 12-issue story where he's slowly getting dumber and dumber. And the visual coolness of it, he has to keep reverting to old armor. So, like, he starts flying around in, like, the 80s armor and then the 70s armor.
He goes, like, backwards in time because he can't operate the sophisticated operating systems of the current-day armor. So as he forgets information of, like, who Spider-Man is,
he also forgets
how to use the Mark 42, and he has to go to the Mark 41.
He also forgets how to use chopsticks and things like that.
Right.
He's slowly just deleting
his own IQ.
He
used to speak Japanese, and now he can't anymore. It's like there was a lot of cool stuff
in
there.
And so Norman's coming after him with like the most advanced Iron Man armor.
And Tony's got to like outfox him in like the Mark 3.
Yeah, and it's a 12-issue storyline in the final issue. It's not really a spoiler, but the final issue is him in that Mark 1, that original armor that he built in the cave.
And he's back in the cave, I think.
Yeah, it's I think it's the best Iron Man story that's ever been written.
Yeah.
As you said, Demon in a Bottle is really good. I have a lot of love for Armor
but,
Wars.
But I think this is... There's some great Iron Man stories, but I think this was like the modern day... That would blow people's mind if that was a fucking movie. You know what I mean?
It came out right on the heels of that first movie.
Yeah.
So
yeah, this was the book they launched after the movie.
Well, actually, not unfortunately, because Norman Osborn is part of Spider-Man. So if you want to start putting Norman in Avengers movies now, you could. It's Homecoming is the most important thing that's happened in the Marvel Cinematic Universe since Iron Man was – since the first Avengers.
Yeah, I think that's a thing to kind of look forward to. It's like Spider-Man Homecoming cannot be understated how big a deal it is that Marvel got the rights to Spider-Man, because that's the pebble that's going to lead to the avalanche of getting the Fantastic Four back,
and
getting the X-Men back.
But with Marvel's track record, it has a very good chance of being the best Spider-Man movie that's ever been made.
Yes. I mean, yeah, aside from – that's kind of a I don't want to say it's like a given that Marvel's just going to make great movies, but they
right now they are.
They have a great track record, and even like they're not so great ones, like Iron Man 3 is still got some charm to it.
Iron Man 2 is probably either Iron Man 2 or Thor Dark World is the worst Marvel movie,
and they're still watchable.
They're still entertaining.
Yeah,
it's like Pixar,
right? You know, it's like there's little gems
Pixar
in them
until
still.
They started making Cars 2,
right?
But That story with Norman was great, and then it ends in Siege, which is not a great story in my opinion.
It looks great.
But the ending of that is that he just can't hold it together, and he eventually just turns into the Green Goblin while wearing an Iron Man suit.
Yeah, what's great is like, so Norman, me and Dave and Stu always talk about Norman Osborn. He's like a great character because this guy is Iron Man. That's Tony Stark. Right? Tony Stark was an industrialist and he built weapons for the government. Norman Osborn had the same job, and then Spider-Man came along and he went like cuckoo banana balls and like got hooked on goblin juice. It's like Norman Osborn would be Tony Stark if he had a better haircut and kept his shit together.
Yeah,
I was reading
an interview with Fraction. Or it might have been a podcast with our friend John Suntress, but he talks about while that story was running, he talks about how Norman has made a better Iron Man villain than a Spider-Man villain.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, we kingpinned him.
Yeah. They kingpinned him.
Because Kingpin was a Spider-Man villain who works much better as a Daredevil villain.
Yeah. And I think that's a sign of like a really great villain that they redefined him. And now anyway, he's back to being the Green Goblin now. But that Iron Patriot era was awesome. And that's kind of like when they take characters like this and they twist it on their head like that.
But it also shows when a character who's all about himself and getting revenge on his enemies is given too much power.
Oh, and implodes.
They will implode.
Yeah.
And that has definite correlations today, no matter what you feel about this administration.
Yeah, we're in for some interesting times.
Yeah, that I also immediately went to 2000 in DC when Lex Luthor became president.
Yeah.
Which seemed to be a correlation of George W. Bush, although they published this story before the results of the election, or at least before the results of the recount.
Yeah. Because
the recount ended up going another 2 months.
I think that recount was until like February, wasn't it?
It went on until the next year. I remember it just being draining.
Yeah.
But, you know, DC was like, here's our election special, it'll come out in November, and they were ready to go.
Yeah.
And Luthor was already president.
And I like that, and me and Dave talked about it at the store. Marvel was like ready to do something like this. Like, they had mentioned in Civil War 2 number 0, like the Second Civil War, which is a stupid book, the number 0 had a meeting between Barack Obama and Rhodey, like War Machine, and he was telling Rhodey he basically wanted Rhodey to be the next president. Like that Obama was like, look, I know how the world works. I've been president for a long time. It's not that long before Tony Stark decides he should be president and he can do a better job than you could. Like me being like the president, like better than a civilian could, because he's a superhero. And me and Dave were like, this is amazing. Is Marvel setting up? Because we knew they were going to kill War Machine.
Right now, I would settle for Don Cheadle being president.
Oh, yeah, anybody. But what I'm saying is, like, they missed a good opportunity because then they killed War Machine, but they could have had War Machine talk to Tony about this conversation. War Machine dies, and then Tony says, I'm going to become the president that Rhodey could have been. And then that gets Tony Stark out of the Iron Man suit as the president in a new interesting role, and then this Riri Williams girl who's like running around as Ironheart or whatever, she could be like the new Iron Man.
Or even more interesting, that could start a rift between Tony Stark and Rhodey.
Yeah.
Rhodey could start Tony thinking, maybe I should be president, and now Rhodey's in his way.
Yeah, but Rhodey got killed in the thing.
Well, yeah, but it reminds me of Hamilton. Of the story of Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr, who both huge people in the formation of our government, neither one became president.
Yeah, it's like Ben Franklin wasn't a president. It's like this dude was like all over the goddamn place.
Well, we saw Hamilton. I've been wanting to talk about it. Our good friend Mike Drucker, who's been on the show a couple times, has a podcast called The Room Where It Happens, where all he's talking about is the Hamilton musical.
Yeah, let's take a break here for a second. This musical podcast your buddy's doing,
yeah,
it's just about Hamilton.
Yeah.
How often does he do an episode?
I got to see when the last one he does. He also has another one called How to Be a Person. He's got a few podcasts.
Yeah.
It's one of those people that creates another topic and creates another podcast. We do the opposite. We just talk about whatever the fuck.
We cram every topic into one show.
We're just like, what do we want to... We have to do something every week.
Yeah. But could you imagine trying to do like more than one podcast?
No.
That would be insane. I love these people that just have like a torrent of thoughts, and that's good for him, you know?
Yeah.
All right, so he's doing an entire podcast on Hamilton.
Yeah, so he's obsessed with it. There's that much material. And my wife and I went to see it on New Year's Eve at the Chicago Theater. We saw at the Bank of America Theater, actually, in Chicago. We saw the Chicago production, which was incredible. And it was one of those things, like, everybody's been talking about Hamilton for, like, the last year. Like,
yeah.
And I kept saying, how is everyone obsessed with Hamilton, but no one can go see it?
Yeah.
So what is it that's getting them all worked up? And then within a month, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who created it, he hosted Saturday Night Live, and he did a great job. And in his monologue, he changed one of the songs in Hamilton to be about Saturday Night Live. And I was like, that's a really great song.
Yeah.
And then he was on WTF with Marc Maron, which is king of all podcasts. And he sounded like a very interesting guy. And then PBS ran this show, I think it's called Creating Hamilton or Making Hamilton. And it was a documentary both on the life of Alexander Hamilton and the making of the show. And then I saw all of this, and I was like, oh, well, okay, let me find out more about the show. And then when I Googled it, tickets on StubHub popped up. So that was our Christmas present. We went to see it.
And yeah.
It is phenomenal. It's maybe the best musical I've ever seen.
That's crazy.
And, of course, they had a moment where Mike Pence went to see it, and the cast was like, please don't hurt everyone.
Yeah.
Just try to be a good president. And then, of course, the alt-right was like, we're going to boycott Hamilton, which would be hilarious if anyone in New York could get tickets before September.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is this
Chicago
like,
was a little easier.
Yeah. But, my brother, I think, is going to get to see it in New York, but he bought tickets for like mid to late 2017 or early 2018. It's like that's how far down the line he had to buy tickets.
The cast isn't even there anymore.
Right. It's like a whole new group of people.
Yeah, but it's absolutely
I don't know anything about
hard to see.
I don't know anything about this show. This is about Alexander Hamilton, and it's just about the Revolutionary War,
is like part of it. It's his life story. It starts when he comes to America when he's about 20 years old.
Where does he hail from? And it goes is to he his a Dane?
Caribbean. He's born in the Caribbean.
But he's a white guy.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, he was like he's part of the American colonies in the Caribbean. Like, you know, the colonies were all over the place. It was before the revolution,
right?
And he was in the Caribbean, and his mother dies in the Caribbean, and he's by himself. And they find out he's such a genius and he's such a brilliant writer that they say you have to go to America. And he goes to New York, and he immediately falls in with the revolutionaries who are planning the American Revolution, and he becomes a big part of that.
Yeah,
he becomes Washington's secretary. And then he's frustrated being a secretary, and then he goes to war. And then he creates the American Treasury Department. And one of the things I didn't know until I saw the musical was the Capitol was supposed to be in New York.
Yeah.
And he has a deal, and there's a song called The Room Where It Happens, which is one of the breakout songs in the show. He has a dinner with, like, James Madison and Monroe. And the three of them have a dinner where they decide – all right, here's the compromise. The Capitol will be in Washington, D.C. The banks will be in New York. And the song is about Aaron Burr, who wants to be president, who never becomes president, is about, like, why am I not in that room? Like, you know, how come these guys decided the fate of our country forever?
Yeah.
Because, you know, Wall Street is still in New York and the Capitol is still in D.C. And they're friends, and then a rivalry comes, and there's a few reasons they have a rivalry. And it ends – this is not a spoiler because it's – American
it's history.
Aaron Burr kills Alexander Hamilton in a duel.
Yeah.
And that's but neither one becomes president, but they're both the founders of America.
So the guy who was in the duel with him?
Yeah, Aaron Burr.
Lisa, like one of her teachers is like a descendant of that guy.
Of Aaron Burr?
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, it's interesting because Aaron Burr runs for president against Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson is our second president?
Yeah.
I'm like a dumb person. I don't know any of this stuff. I'm sorry.
I think he's third. Or is it Adams is second? I'm getting, yeah, I'm not a huge history guy, but I.
It would help if the streets in Chicago were in the order the presidents were elected.
If the streets of Chicago were in order of anything.
Well, the presidents are, you know, they have, yeah, I guess we don't really do. Yeah, well, that's fine.
They're just all
fair enough.
They're all named something, and then they start being named against other states that are not Illinois. No, yeah. There's an Illinois street.
Yeah.
You know how hard it was to find a place in for the first 2 years I lived in the city?
We don't do numbers, huh?
No, we don't do numbers. We don't have a grid.
No.
But what happens is the thing that really splits them is Aaron Burr runs against Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton endorses Jefferson and he hated Jefferson.
Yeah.
But he said, look, he's a better candidate than Aaron Burr.
Right.
And that causes it. And it's interesting to see. I think it's really apropos now because Hamilton was a guy who stood up for his principles. And sometimes those principles were wrong and sometimes he got into serious trouble.
Yeah.
Doing it. But I think it's apropos now of like that principles matter. And we've been in this place, I think, since the millennium where it seems that the loudest voice just wins and it doesn't matter if we're principled. And we have a president now that tells you he didn't say what we recorded him saying 2 days ago. I mean, you know, Seth Meyers had a great quote that's when we talk about Trump becoming president. He goes, well, on the bright side, this is a guy who has had every position on every topic.
Right.
Depending on when you ask him. So maybe he'll only do the good things.
Right. Maybe he'll do the things you specifically, the person who voted for him, thinks he'll do.
Right. But it's another fascinating thing. Hopefully someday there'll be a really great movie made of it. It's too big a musical not for it to get.
Yeah, I guess that's my thing. Is like I'll never be able to afford or get tickets to Hamilton. So it'd be nice if they did do and if they did a movie, you think they'd get the guy who like made it?
Probably.
To do it?
Probably, because he also starred as Hamilton.
Yeah, he like wrote and started.
Yeah. But it's also going to be a show where it's going to run for at least 5 years. So maybe 3-4 years from now, tickets won't be that hard to get because everybody will have seen it.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely worth seeing it. I'm not a big musical guy.
Yeah, but it isn't like that's like all Broadway is now, right? Is like musicals. They don't have like plays that aren't musicals.
They
really
do, but
anymore.
They don't make the money. Musicals are the superhero movies of stage.
Of stage, yeah. You know, that's amazing. Musicals, which is interesting because they can't figure out how to do a superhero musical.
They can't really figure out how to do musical movies.
Yeah.
It's like rare that one of them works.
But like we were saying, Les Mis, didn't that do really well? And
Les Mis did pretty well. Chicago did really, really well.
Right. But then remember the movie Ryan Gosling and that one girl was in, the girl that's like Mary Jane or Gwen Stacy or whatever? They did a musical. Yeah.
Oh, La La Land?
La La Land is a musical.
That's doing well. Yeah, musicals are getting better, but for a long time they were like musicals and westerns. Yeah. Something that Hollywood may make all the time that they can't make now.
Yeah. And I think westerns, that's still true. It's like they really don't. I mean, Magnificent Seven, they did a remake and it didn't go anywhere.
Spielberg said last year about how superhero movies were eventually going to become the new western.
Yeah.
Everybody got mad at him. And I'm like, how are you going to get mad at the guy that created Indiana Jones? Shut up.
Right.
Your opinion is less valid than his. But when I thought about it, people were like, no, superhero movies are going to last forever. I'm like, no, they still make westerns. Like I said, they just made Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. They just won't make as many.
But they make like one western a year. It seems.
Right.
Like True Grit was a few years ago and was nominated for Oscars.
But to say that superhero movies is a fad is kind of dumb because they've been making superhero movies since the early 90s.
Yeah, but now they're making so many.
No, totally. I'll definitely grant you they're making way more than they ever did, but they're not going to go away.
Right. But that's why
it's like disaster movies. They just came out with another Independence Day. It's just like, all right, we haven't blown up the White House recently. Let's blow it up again.
Yeah, no genre completely dies, and that's why I think westerns is apropos. You know what? In 20 years, we're not going to have this many superheroes. No way,
because they'll have made everybody.
Yeah, they've already made everybody.
Well,
I mean, we've talked about this. When I think of superheroes that have not been made, and I look at. Just looking at the big two, okay? We don't have a Savage Dragon movie.
Yeah.
But we have two Hellboy movies.
Right.
We have a Spawn movie. But when you go to the big two, who are the superheroes that everyone knows, those are the superheroes own the market share. I have to go down the bench of second and third characters of somebody's book. You know what? We don't have the Scorpion in a Spider-Man movie. That's about as high level as I need to go.
Yeah. Do we need to see Paste Pot Pete in a movie?
Mantis is going to be in a movie this year.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
You know, it's so as far
we might get Wonder Man. Simon, what's his name, or Nathan Fillion might actually get to be a superhero in the Marvel Universe.
At least in a cameo. I mean, as far as the A-list of either one of them, we've had them all. I mean, you know, we've already had the Flash in these movies.
Yeah.
Even though we have a TV show. We don't have the Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you count TV shows, yeah, everybody. Hawkman is on the, whatchamacallit show, Vixen.
Azrael was on Gotham.
Yeah. It's silly.
Yeah, we have every... So in 20 years, we're not going to have this amount of movies. We'll have the good ones and the ones that are most popular. In 20 years, we'll probably have Batman and Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, we'll just be like, it'll be... You know, the 12th Batman, you know, it'll be like James Bond. They still make James Bond movies. They've been making him for 50 fucking years.
Yeah.
They're not going to stop.
But that's another apropos thing. They don't make other spy movies. They make Jason Bourne.
Well, they make that Train Spotter. What was that? Jason Statham? He was doing like spy movies for a minute.
I don't think those were spy movies as much as they were just action movies.
Yeah.
The Transporter.
No, not those movies, but he was in a movie with like that heavy comedian girl that's like super hilarious.
McCarthy?
I think they played.
That was a comedy. Yeah, spy. Parody of spy movies.
Oh, I guess
as far as real spy movies.
As far as real spy movies, you're right. They just make James Bond.
We have James Bond, but in the 60s, we had them all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that was like the genre.
Yeah, we had like in like Flint and The Prisoner on TV. And,
yeah.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E. on TV. Spies were a huge genre because James Bond was such a hit in the 60s.
And think about this too. Since I've been born, we've had two different, we're currently on our third iteration of Batman movies.
Yeah.
Right? We had the first four with Michael Keaton to George Clooney, then the Christian Bale movies, now Ben Affleck. And it's just like same thing. And we've had two different Spider-Mans, now on our third.
Yep.
And we've had two different Supermans. Because George, or what's his name?
Clooney?
No. What's his name? From Clooney Superman Returns. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, Brandon Routh.
I'm on my second Superman in my lifetime. You're really thinking I'm not going to have four more?
No, you're not that young. Christopher Reeve was around in your lifetime.
No, but I'm saying he wasn't playing Superman screen since I've been born.
Yeah, he finished in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's going to keep happening. Which reminds me of an interesting thing was I got into this conversation with Mike Lawrence, who's been on the show a few times. He folded his podcast, but man, that guy's everywhere. He's on Comedy Central right now judging the roast battle Sunday nights because he won last year. He started talking about Spider-Man villains and how every Spider-Man villain has been replaced. There's at least two guys that have had every identity. And I said, oh, no, not the Scorpion. And he was like, nope, there was that female Scorpion.
Yeah, real quickly in the 90s. Yeah,
forgot about. And it was...
they had a female Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, yeah, during the Clone Saga.
Everyone.
But, like, you go down the line, there's been a ton of goblins. Goblins and symbiotes. I have bins just for Spider-Man Marvel Legends because there's so many. I have a Spider-Man bin, a Spider-Man villain bin, and I have a goddamn goblin and symbiote bin.
Yeah, look how many Venoms we've had.
Yeah. And you know what? I started thinking, guys, the only guy I came up with that he accepted was Chameleon. Like, there hasn't been another Chameleon.
There's only one Chameleon.
But, you know, Kraven's had, like, his whole family come out and be Kraven.
There's been two Rhinos. There's been two Electros.
Yep.
Two Dr. Octopuses. Yep. There's only been one Lizard.
Yeah. There's been a few variations of him, though. Like, they've redesigned him a few times. There has been... No, but there's been a Stegron.
That's true. Morbius.
But Morbius is
that's what I'm saying. You have to go
Morbius
down the list. You have to go really far down the list. There's been more than one fucking Prowler, for Christ's sake.
I started thinking about Sandman, and then I went, no.
No.
Hydro Man's another Sandman.
Not only that, there's a villain called Quicksand.
Is there?
It's a female, it's basically female Sandman. Quicksand, yeah.
Yeah, Kingpin. I said there's only been one Kingpin, but there have been so many other characters that have been.
The crime boss.
Tombstone, the big man.
The Rose.
Yeah.
Half of them are Kingpin's kids.
The schemer.
Yeah.
Yeah. There have been so... I think we've only had one Hammerhead.
And we only have one Shocker, I think.
We've had a couple of Beatles.
Yeah.
No, we had a couple of Shockers. I feel like we had a couple of Shockers.
Just Herman Schultz.
I thought there was another one, and then Herman Schultz came back.
There were two Vultures. But there were two Vultures, like, years ago.
There were two Vultures in the Romita Sr. era.
Yeah.
Blackie Drago.
Yeah.
That's how it got started.
And he had a cool, like, hood.
Yeah, he had a helmet.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice
touch. And in fact,
that's
the Vulture that's in the 60s cartoon.
Yes, which is amazing.
Has my favorite, Howie Weingarten, who's been on the show, who's a good friend of ours, loved that quote from that show his favorite quote ever from Spider-Man 67 is Vulture, who, while he's planning to rob somebody or kidnap somebody, he goes, they will respect a man with wings.
Right. As you do.
Well, you know, there's a lot of guys with wings, but we don't respect them.
Right.
Well, now that we've spent a lot of time talking about supervillains, are there any, you know what? There was another Final Crisis with another story about what happens when Darkseid wins and what's the world going to be like.
Yeah.
A lot of people are pointing out Biff Tannen in Back to the Future 2.
Which takes place entirely in the past now.
And who was, yeah, but the character was, Bob Gale, who wrote it, said the character was based on Trump because Trump,
really?
Yeah, Trump was building Trump Tower in the 80s.
Yeah, that's amazing.
The first, my first memories of Trump was when he was getting divorced from Ivana Trump and had Marla Maples as his mistress. That was like in the late 80s. And he was in at least the New York News all the time.
He was in Home Alone. That's how I remember him.
He's in Home Alone 2. Yeah.
Yeah, he's cameo. That's the first time I was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah, and he wasn't good in it.
No, he's terrible. But,
Home
you know.
Home Alone 2 is not even good.
No,
he's
it's not.
The worst thing in it.
But, you know, this is, these are strange. These are times it's like stranger than fiction, you know? It's like if I wrote this shit down and gave this to like an, a briefing you like 2 years ago, you would have laughed your tits off. Like this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, we are now literally living in a comic book universe.
Yeah,
I'm just waiting for good people with superpowers to show up
and help
and
us.
And I remember on 9/11, one of the thoughts I had was, oh, I guess there really aren't any superheroes because Superman would have come in.
Yeah,
if there was ever a not that I believed that there were, but I'm like, if there was ever a moment where a superhero shows up and saves people,
that's when we would have needed him.
Yeah, so get to work on those radioactive animals.
The greatest thing in the world
this week.
So a buddy of mine, Tim, runs or has run. He's currently playing it, but he was running the D&D game we started. There's one in Oak Lawn now, and we started one in La Grange. And I haven't played like D&D in like, I don't know, 10 years or something. But it's a lot of fun, and we've been playing for like months now in Oak Lawn. He lent me a book called Rat Queens. It's a comic from Image. And Lisa told me like years ago about this book, and it's one of those ones where it's like people recommend stuff to me like constantly, but I'm like a selfish person that's like only interested in what I want to read, and the stack is out of control. So for me to get to watch or read anything, it's just like it takes a minute. So Tim lent me this book like months ago, like back in like when like the sky was still blue, and I finally got to reading it, and I read it in one sitting. It was phenomenal, and it's basically a Dungeons and Dragons like comic book, but set in like a Dungeons and Dragons world with like you know, ogres and dragons and shit. But they don't talk like Lord of the Rings characters. They talk like regular people, so they're all like this fucking guy. Like they swear they're doing drugs. It's like it's just follows this group of like girls around. It's like a team. And there's like other adventuring teams that all have like their own personalities. Like the characters are really well developed. It's kind of Fiona Staples saga artwork. It's got to be done on like the computer or something. But it's like super well written. All the characters are like really fleshed out. It's just like I really like team books. Like Avengers is like why I like Avengers so much is like I like different people interacting. And this book is kind of like just a bunch of like medieval kind of asshole-ish Avengers like running around like fighting goblins and shit, and it's the most fun I've had reading a comic in like a long time. It's just like a fun ride book. But yeah, Rat Queens, Image puts it out. I don't know the writer or the artist because I'm terrible. It's phenomenal. It's like I highly recommend it.
I haven't even heard of it. You reminded me of the way you described it, of Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which I just reread.
Yeah, I got to reread that.
I got the hardcover. I have all the issues because you recommended it. And
yeah.
I actually don't want it to be my greatest thing because we've talked about it so many times when it was being
published. It is very much worth a read because it was basically that book, but a D&D book.
Yeah, and I read it. I read the whole series in about two sittings, like on my commute.
Yeah.
And when you read the whole thing, it really holds up well. It's one story.
Yeah, it is.
And as I said, we've used that a few times. So the other thing I've rediscovered the last few months is Kids in the Hall, which is maybe my favorite sketch show ever made. And I'm only realizing it now in hindsight. And if you don't know it, it was a Canadian sketch show that Lorne Michaels produced. It ran from the very late 80s through the mid 90s.
This is like the SNL guy, right?
Yes. Yeah, Lorne Michaels, who created SNL. Basically, the story was they were doing, they were basically at the second city in Canada called the Rivoli, and they were doing Friday night shows. And then Lorne Michaels went up to see them and at first hired two of them to be writers, and it didn't work at all. And then realized, oh, wait, these guys are a really solid group. So then he got them their own show in Canada. And that show got rebroadcast in this country, and it bounced all over the place. It was on HBO originally, and then it was on CBS for a little while, like very late at night. And but Comedy Central would rerun it all the time. And it was a show that we were obsessed with when it came on. Howie Weingarten, who I mentioned before, it was at that point in the early 90s, we were inseparable. Comedy Central was just starting.
Yeah.
So they had some really good reruns, and they would show them all the time. And like during the day, they would show old Jack Benny shows, and then they would show Saturday Night Live, and then they would show the Blackadder and the Young Ones, and they would show Kids in the Hall. And on weekends, they would show new episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Was like the only original show they had.
Yeah.
It's like before Daily Show, before South Park. And we were obsessed with all of it, but I didn't realize watching it until now just how much it shaped my style of comedy. I realized watching these sketches, it was like, oh, I wrote something that sounded like that later. And I wrote something that sounded like that later. And I realized, oh, this is the reason I took improv classes and I was terrible at them. And this is the reason that I kept doing stand-up and I kept doing comedy. And none of them are really big. They all kind of became character actors. Dave Foley was big for a little bit. He was Flick in Bug's Life.
Oh, okay.
And he starred in News Radio afterwards, which isn't remembered today, but it was a phenomenal show.
That was that show.
Phil Hartman.
Yeah, that's a great show. Yeah. And I hate Andy Dick, but that was a, but that's a really, it's a good show.
Joe Rogan is on that.
Who was the boss?
Dave Foley.
Yeah, Dave Foley, yes.
And Dave Foley's from Kids in the Hall.
That's amazing. And, who is he in Kids in the Hall? Oh, because it's a sketch
it was
group,
a
so
sketch
he was
show,
playing
so
all
was,
kinds of characters.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. But it was on Netflix for a long time, and I don't think it's streaming anywhere. Maybe CISO. CISO seems to be this new app that's picking up a lot of old comedy. But I have all the DVDs, and there's a lot of it on YouTube. So just go to YouTube and put in Kids in the Hall, and you'll see some of the best sketches I've ever seen. And I've been showing them to Ben, and a lot of it's way too old for him.
Yeah.
Because it's late 80s, and Scott Thompson, who was in it, was like one of the first openly gay comedians. So there's always just a sketch in every episode about being gay.
Yeah.
And that really was very controversial at the time. Now it's like, oh, okay, that guy's gay.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, that's, let's not forget that dude is like part of the group of people that made like homosexuality like acceptable.
Right.
It's like why like Ellen, people are shitty at Ellen because she got like a medal from Obama, and it's just like that woman carried the burden. I don't want to be like offensive. The guy who's like transitioning, the Kendall Jenner, this famous person.
Yes,
that person. I don't know
Jenner.
What the
Caitlin.
She's carrying that burden for the transgender community, much like Ellen carried that like 10 years ago.
Right. And Ellen, I still like a lot because I think Ellen's still funny.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
I'm not crazy about a talk show because it's not directed to me, but
yeah,
her stand-up was always great. Finding Dory was great.
And that's what I'm saying. It's just like, that woman's like a hero. You know what I mean? It's just like,
I finally saw Finding Dory around Christmas. We gave the Blu-ray to the kids for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen it. They went to see it twice without me. And it was great.
Yeah.
And like, she's still really, really funny.
We went to Disney World recently, and we talked about this last week, and we got like 2 minutes. I'll wrap this up. But there's a show in Disney World where like Ellen and Bill Nye talk about like energy and go back to like the dinosaur times. Mm-hmm. And it's super, super 90s. It's like so dated. Like, she has like a huge cell phone in it. It's like, it's like silly how 90s it is.
MeTV showed just this morning, they were showing an episode of Bill Nye the Science Guy, and
yeah,
the opening was the most 90s thing
ever.
It has rap guys chanting Bill,
yeah,
Bill.
That's
they don't do that anymore.
No, they don't. But you know, it's charming, and she's good in it, and her and Bill Nye are good folk. They got, you know, they're good people.
Yeah. It was great. Yeah, but Yeah, Kids in the Hall would be mine. Just go on YouTube and
never find
that. Kids in the Hall Live was the first date I ever went on with my wife.
Oh, that's awesome.
As I met her at a party.
Yeah.
And we started talking about comedy and Kids in the Hall came up, and I said, you know, they're coming to New York and Howie Weingarten won't go.
Yeah.
And I don't know who to go with. She's like, I'll go. And, you know, 16 years later,
that's
and,
awesome.
Two kids.
I don't think I ever heard that story. That's beautiful.
Well, now everyone's heard it.
There you go.
And
it's recorded for posterity.
If you want to hear more from me, follow me and Not On My Book on Twitter. I'm reposting a lot of political stuff lately and a lot of dark self-deprecating jokes. A lot of that lately.
Yeah. It's the season for it.
Oh, tis the season for
really
despair.
Is. It really is. Wait till it's, it gets a little brighter out there. There you go.
Well,
I'm currently like hibernating. You know, I don't like to go out and do anything in the wintertime.
I'm currently in the mood where I don't know that it's ever going to get brighter again.
Yeah.
Although it has been a mild winter for Chicago standards.
It's not bad. Yesterday was awesome. It was like 50 degrees.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It's gray because the environment can't handle being this warm this fast.
Right.
You can also go to our Facebook page. That's where we post everything. We just posted the new trailer for Logan, which is goddamn amazing.
Yeah. That movie looks awesome. And I don't like Wolverine movies. I know we like, that's the last one we were like.
Yeah, we're split on the last one.
Yeah. But it's, this looks awesome.
Yeah, there hasn't been a Wolverine movie as good as some of the X-Men movies.
There hasn't been a Wolverine movie as good as Hugh Jackman is as Wolverine.
Yeah, well, you know,
he carries those movies. If he was a shitty actor or wasn't doing Wolverine a good job, those movies would be terrible. They would be awful. But he's so good at it.
Yeah, and you know, he wasn't the first choice.
Yeah, that's crazy.
They fired the first choice.
Who was the first choice?
This guy, Doug Ray Scott, who went on, he was in like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. You never saw him again.
How do you think that guy feels right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
Broke.
Yeah, I bet he's real mad.
But yeah, you know what? The X-Men has a 50-50 battering average.
Yep.
And lately it's been every other one. And I'm like, you know what? Apocalypse wasn't so good, but Deadpool was really good. That means Logan's going to be really good. Like
hopefully.
Star Trek movies.
I'm hoping.
But you can see the new trailer on our Facebook page. That's where we post all our news. And you can listen to all of the episodes. You can listen to us arguing about the Wolverine movies, for example.
Yeah.
You can listen to every episode we've ever made on iTunes, Stitchers, or caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com, where it will be free forever. And Steven, you can sometimes find...
Yeah, sometimes you can find me at Camaras Comics at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!